Down the Dump Podcast.
Welcome to the Down and Dunk Podcast. This is Andrew, and I'm joined by Carson Cunningham from KOCO. Carson, thanks for coming on again. We appreciate everything that you've done for our podcast, and hopefully we can talk about some good things today.
Yeah, we have one good thing to talk about. Not so much in game one.
No. So Kevin Durant, we've talked a lot about this, but he is finally officially the most valuable player in the NBA. This is incredible for our state and for this team, and hopefully it will give this team a little bit of motivation going forward, knowing that they have the official MVP on their team.
Well, yeah, it's kind of awkward. I mean, I was worried they were going to give it to him after he was eliminated by the Grizzlies. Yeah. That would have been all kinds of awkward. Now, game one was a tail-kicking, and he gets it right after that. So Kevin's going to be a little subdued, and that's natural. He hates losing, but it really is an historic thing. I mean, I was kind of surprised at how unanimous it was. I mean, I think everyone knew Kevin was going to win the award, but there's still a lot of people out there that don't want to give it to him because they think LeBron's the best player in the world, and LeBron only got 6 first-place votes. I thought it was pretty unanimous in the fact that I think everyone was on the same page that this was really Kevin's season. So it's a great deal for the city. It's a great deal for Kevin, and it's really well-deserved.
Yeah, I just hope that he can follow it up with a little bit better postseason than what we've seen. But as far as his regular season, you know, being the scoring champion and getting the MVP, it doesn't get much better than that for a player and for such a small market to get this kind of recognition. And to, you know, people talk about how you see Durant jerseys all over the nation, all over the world. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. I don't know that I expected him to be this big a deal whenever he first came to Oklahoma City.
No, you're right. It really has put the Thunder on the map. I had a friend that was playing ball actually in New York, and he was wearing a Thunder shirt, and he was playing with some foreigners. I can't remember what nationality they were, but they just walked up to him and were like, Oklahoma? Oklahoma? So no one knew where Oklahoma was on a map before Kevin Durant, let's mm-hmm. be honest. So it's a great deal for the city, and it really is an opportunity for the city to kind of show, like, with all the controversy at the headline and everything, it's really an opportunity to show that Oklahoma, just how much they love Kevin, and it's going to shine a light on Oklahoma City today with the press conference. So he's been through a lot of drama with that headline and everything. He's moving on, mm-hmm. but now he's got the Clippers to deal with, but for at least today, he can kind of revel in the fact that he's literally the best player on the planet.
What were your thoughts on that headline, the Mr. Unreliable?
Well, I was in Memphis. I didn't see it at first, but obviously I got on Twitter and it was just exploding. Mm-hmm. And I thought the whole thing could have been avoided with just presentation. The headline was fine as long as you have a subheader that says the most reliable player in the league has not been reliable in this series. I think that would have, mm-hmm. I think, staved off the entire controversy. I think people just, when you just stick Mr. Unreliable up there with a picture of Kevin Durant, that's a little different. That's almost like you're questioning who he is as a person, who he is as a player, and just basically judging his entire career, which is why it took off as such a firestorm. People didn't even read Trammell's article, which was very fair and very on point. All he was saying was that if Kevin Durant doesn't play better, Thunder are going to lose. That's basically all he was saying. So presentation is everything, and especially in print. If you don't word it a certain way, you don't clarify it in a certain light, people are going to run with it, and that's what happened. Like you even saw Sam Presti's press release about it. Even he took it the wrong way. He was mm-hmm. commenting on Kevin being reliable and helping out with the tornado victims, which is great, but that's not what their headline was talking about. They weren't questioning Kevin's humanitarianism mm-hmm. or whatever, but it was just a huge mess. And I was in Memphis with the Oklahoman guys. I was actually with those guys the night before the thing dropped, and man, I kind of felt for Trammell. I mean, he was at the center of it, and he didn't even write the headline. And to his credit, he was answering emails all day. His cell phone rang at 7:30 in the morning, he said, from an irate reader. I guess his cell phone is the number they list in the paper, which is just crazy to me.
That is nuts.
But he stood out in front and said, hey, we were wrong, and they apologized. And, you know, people keep asking me, like, man, should they apologize? Well, if it was a mistake, which it certainly seems like it was, it seems mm-hmm. like a copy editor didn't go through the right channels, if it was a mistake like that, you have to come out and apologize. Now, if it was a concerted effort from the entire sports staff, hey, this is the headline we're going to use, we're going to stir things up, well, then you stand by it. I don't think it was a concerted effort by them to make some kind of splash or anything. I think it was just a simple mistake. Yeah. That's why they apologized, and I think that was the right move.
Yeah, I agree. And they, even if they just put a question mark after it, I think that would have been as big
just,
a deal.
Just a little Ron Burgundy question mark would have solved all those issues. Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
So last night the Thunder played a game, or kind of played a game. They were up 16-10. Everything looked great. The Clippers called the timeout, and then the Clippers came out and went on a 24-6 run and just buried them with threes.
Yeah, when the Thunder made that run, I think there was a sequence where it was like a surge dunk, a Tabo steal, and a KD three.
Mm-hmm.
You were almost like, man, Thunder having fun playing a team that doesn't play any defense. This is great. This isn't like the Grizzlies are way in the rearview mirror. And then they played a team that knows how to shoot the basketball, and we saw what happened. And it really, the Thunder perimeter defense, which has been a problem since the All-Star break, finally reared its ugly head. That's why I thought the Thunder would have no problem with the Grizzlies, because they were the worst three-point shooting team in the entire NBA, and that was the Thunder's biggest weakness. Well, their biggest weakness came to fruition last night. Chris Paul should never go 8-for-9 from three. That's just not what he does. even Chris Paul said after the game, look, that's not going to happen in game two. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was just a debacle. It looked like the Thunder were the team that had to travel to the West Coast after a day's rest. They didn't look ready to play at all. I mean, I know they jumped out to an early lead, but from then on, they just looked kind of defeated and out of it. It's almost like they kind of said, well, Clippers are going to make their shots. We'll come back in game two. It was a very alarming performance. I thought it was shocking. This team is so hard to figure out. You know, I mean, people ask me all the time what's going on with the Thunder. They're just hard to figure out. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't know what team you're getting night in, night out. And that's not the mark of a champion. We don't see NBA. You know, I think this team was good enough to win the title. You don't see NBA title-worthy teams getting smoked on their home floor like the way they did. So that's the alarm bells are ringing off, that's for sure.
Yeah, and there's definitely a switch with this team. You know, people talk about, you know, a team flipping a switch. I mean, we've seen it happen over and over again in just one round. And hopefully they can flip it against the Clippers, but it just seems like they kind of pick and choose whenever they're going to show effort and whenever they're going to care about games. And that's really frustrating.
Yeah, and you see that mostly on the defensive side of the ball, especially with, I mean, it's not all Russell Westbrook. He takes a lot of heat, but his defense just sticks out. When he doesn't play defense, it sticks out like a sore thumb. And it's crazy that he came into the league literally as a defensive specialist. Yeah. It's almost like he's the inverse Tony Allen. I watched Tony Allen in college. That guy could score. They would run clear outs for him in crunch time. Now he can't play a lick of offense in the NBA. Well, it's almost the same with Russell on the other end. It's like certain games he can shut down Mike Conley, then the other games he just does the James Harden ole, and last night he was just nowhere to be found. I mean, he had 6 turnovers, which isn't good, but Kevin and Russell were good enough on offense. They scored plenty of points. It was just a nightmare defensive night, and that's not going to change with the Clippers. That's what they do. They make you look bad on defense, and the Thunder got to figure some things out.
Yeah, and if Tabo's going to play at all, shouldn't he be guarding Chris Paul?
Like, absolutely.
I thought we figured that out over and over again.
I mean, I thought that's why he was starting in the first place. I thought they were going to put Russell over on J.J. Redick, just let him run. You know, if anyone can run through screens, I guess Russell has trouble with that right now, but if anyone has the stamina to run through J.J. Redick's screens, you would think it would be Russell Westbrook, but maybe they don't want to tire him out on the offensive end as well. But I thought that's why they were starting Tabo in the first place. Why else would you deviate from the starting lineup that really – put a whooping on the Grizzlies? So Scott Brooks is going to have to – he made great adjustments towards the end of the series. Last time, he's going to have to make them game two. I mean, you can't wait against this team. Clippers are a different animal.
Yeah. And the bench production last night was pretty terrible. I mean, we had the garbage time, Jeremy Lamb, Perry Jones stuff, but
– yeah, people are going to be clamoring for Jeremy Lamb to start now, I think, after this. he was the only one that did anything.
I know. And you know what? He looked like he was having a lot of fun out there playing basketball because he hasn't done it in forever.
Right.
But I mean, what do you, if you know, I don't think Lamb is going to play.
I mean, the bench has to play better. I mean, Caron Butler has to play better. He was 1-7. Derek Fisher has not been the guy we saw all regular season. Now, is that because he played a full season this time, didn't sit out the first part? Maybe he's tired. I mean, it's hard to tell. But he's simply just not playing as well as he was earlier in the season. That's hurting him. They need Caron Butler to hit, knock down some shots to give him something off the bench. And, yeah, their bench just got worked. I mean, the whole team got worked, but the bench really was a huge factor.
Yeah, that is I don't understand it. I mean, I like Jeremy Lamb, and if there is a switch to be made, I think it is you give Jeremy Lamb Fisher's minutes. I don't think Brooks is going to do that. Brooks's game plan lately seems like it's just been play better. Like, let's keep on doing the same things, and then he made some minor adjustments, but it's just the kind of message I feel like is just play better.
That's the mantra, right? That's what he says after every game, mm-hmm. I think. But no, I don't think you can play Lamb. I mean, there's a reason he's not in the rotation anymore. His shooting percentages went down every month. He completely lost confidence. And if you're playing anyone off the bench, it's going to be those two old guys, Fisher and Butler. I guess Brooks' mantra is right. Those two have to play better. but I mean, the whole team has to play better. I mean, they got stomped. I mean, you can't give up 69 points in the first half. You can't do that if you want to win. It's that simple.
So even though this game was just a debacle, there's still some very interesting matchups throughout for this series. I feel like primarily at point guard and then power forward. Where do you stand on this Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul debate? There's lots of people that think that, you know, Russell is potentially a better point guard. Just kind of throwing out last night's game, because I don't think it's fair to use that as the comparison. Where do you put these two?
Well, it's funny you mention it. I mean, Brian Keating, our sports director, and I have been arguing this since we worked together, basically. Chris Paul is the best point guard in the league. I've been saying that. I mean, I think that's pretty much the universal thinking across the league. Now, if you ask a few Oklahomans, they'll say Russell Westbrook. Brian Keating likes Russell Westbrook. He thinks he's the best point guard. But Russell is too inconsistent to be considered the best point guard. We saw that last night. I mean, it's one game, but Chris Paul is, I think he's put up like the three of the four best PER seasons ever from a point guard. He's the epitome of a point guard, and he has the belt, and Russell has to come and get it. And I've been saying for a long time that Chris Paul is the elite point guard and Russell just too inconsistent. And I think last night was a glimpse at that. Now it's a long series. There's going to be times where Chris can't guard Westbrook, and that's what Russell needs to do. He needs to really give it to Chris Paul on the other end and really force him into his game. So they're two of the best. I think they're the two best for sure when they're on their games. But, I mean, I don't see how any way you can say Westbrook's better than Chris Paul at this point.
Yeah, they're just very different. You know, Chris Paul is your traditional type point guard who's going to manage the game and is going to keep everybody calm and is also fiery, you know, in himself, in that he can, you know, make baskets and get to the bucket. And apparently he can shoot threes too. But and Westbrook, you know, he's going to beat people with athleticism and his shot making, and, you know, his playmaking comes and goes. But I think you're right. Just consistently, I would rather have a guy like Chris Paul running my team than Russell Westbrook. But it's close. I mean, it's very close. It's not something where I don't think Chris Paul is far and away better than Westbrook. But Westbrook has got to mentally get there.
Well, and one of the big arguments against Chris Paul is he's never been out of the second round, mm-hmm. which I would argue he played for the Hornets for most of his career, and he also played for Vinny Del Negro. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a legit chance right now to make it past the second round. But it's true that Chris Paul needs to win something, that's for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. he's been the best point guard for a while, but it's time. If you're the best point guard, you should lead your team further in the second round. So I think that's why we saw him come out last night. I think he's tired of losing in the second round. He put it on the Thunder, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. What's funny is I saw Chris Paul warming up before the game. He was right on the end I was at, and he was missing a lot of threes. He was getting kind of frustrated. I was like, this is a good sign for the Thunder. Chris Paul's not shooting very well. He's getting a little frustrated, and then we saw what happened.
Yeah. I know you said you were there before the game. What was the mood around the team before the game?
Oh, it was business as usual as far as the team. I think the arena was kind of the quick turnaround. It wasn't quite as electric as Game 7 for the Grizzlies. I think the quick turnaround kind of hurt. You know, everyone had kind of a case of the Mondays, you know. Yeah. So it wasn't its typical self before the game. But I don't know. I mean, the arena and the atmosphere goes as the team goes. When they go on those magical runs, it's literally the most electrifying atmosphere I've ever been in. But I think Kevin Durant and the team heard a little booze last night. I mean, and that's part of playing professional sports. I know people are like, oh my gosh, the Thunder fans never boo the team. Well, when you get stomped like that in a game one, when it looks like you're not even there, I mean, people are going to get frustrated. There's a lot on the line. So I don't fault the fans for. I mean, they go as the team goes. And last night, the team went way down, so the Thunder fans went with them.
Yeah, another intriguing matchup: Serge Ibaka versus Blake Griffin. Blake, you know, he's an incredible basketball player, but he's also one of the most frustrating guys to watch if you're on the opposing side, because he just does these little things where, like last night, he trapped Serge Ibaka's leg, and, you know, Serge Ibaka, I mean, obviously that would make him mad, and he, like, kicked his leg and, you know, ended up getting Serge a tech, but you couldn't really see what he was doing. He's always doing, like, these little ticky-tack annoying things throughout the game, and his flopping and everything. You know, he's a guy who's from Oklahoma, and, you know, I taught, you know, high school with his dad. I think that he and his family are great people. But he's the most frustrating and annoying player to watch for me. And I think that that's going to continue to kind of build as the series goes on. What did you see from Blake, and what are your general thoughts on him as a player?
I think that's only the beginning of stuff we're going to be seeing from Blake. What was he doing? Why was he trapping his foot? Was
I
he
don't
just
know.
Was he trying to get Ibaka just to kick him so he could attack? I mean, he literally was just holding his foot there with his feet.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, but that right there, for everyone that says, oh my gosh, people pick on Blake. Oh my God, why do they? They're jealous of Blake. He has commercials. they're just jealous. No, Blake just does stuff like that to get people to retaliate. Why do you think Steven Adams gets elbowed in the face every game? It's because he's elbowing people in the ribs and doing stuff off the ball that you don't see. And Blake Griffin's the exact same way. So if we're gonna call Blake dirty, we have to call Adams dirty too. But that's why people have a problem with Blake, because he does stuff like that. I mean, to trap, and if you'll remember when Ibaka and Blake got into it, and Barnes came over and shoved Ibaka during the regular season, it's because Blake had literally hugged Ibaka's arm, and Ibaka was trying to get his arm free. So it's not like Blake's this innocent victim in all of this. So I don't understand it. He's too good of a player. I mean, he just finished third in the MVP race. Now, I can't. It's hard for me to tell a guy how to play in the NBA. I've never played in the NBA. Maybe that's a way of protecting himself. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like flopping. I don't like. I don't like hugging people's feet with your legs. I don't get it. Blake's too good of a player. He's literally become one of the best all-around players in the league. He can dribble, he can shoot, he can post up, and obviously he can dunk. So he doesn't need to do that. It's almost like Marcus Smart. It's like, dude, you're too good to be doing stuff like that. You don't have to resort to those tactics. Lesser talents should be the ones resorting to those tactics. Lesser skilled players, like a Steven Adams, should be doing stuff like that. So I don't like it. It's really awkward that, you know, he went to OU and now he plays for the team that Thunder fans probably like the least right now. So it's a weird deal, but he's too good of a player. And by the end of this series, I think a lot of Thunder fans are going to hate him.
Yeah, and I don't think the officials know are very good at calling, you know, games with Blake Griffin in them, because I saw there were a lot of calls where he would flop and he would get the foul, and it was clearly not a foul. And then there were also plays where he would get hammered and they wouldn't call anything. And I'm just like, I just don't understand if it's maybe, I mean, I'm not on the court, you know, that close to the game. I can, you know, I can see the replays and everything, but he seems like a guy who, I don't know if he's difficult to officiate or they're just bad at it. I don't know. It seems, I don't know. Everything about watching him is just frustrating.
Well, and I think that has to do with just his expressions, you know, like he meme mugs the refs all game. Now, so does Russell Westbrook. I mean, a lot of the guys mean mug the refs, but Blake especially, every time down the floor, he is just letting the refs have it. I think sometimes he doesn't get calls because of it, and you definitely see that with Russell. There's times where Russell gets leveled when he's driving to the basket, and they don't call it. Well, part of that's, you know, they want to let the guys play, and part of that's, hey, we're tired of you mean mugging us, dude. We're not going to call it. You know, get up. So I think the refs do a really good job. I mean, the NBA to me is the hardest sport to officiate because there's just literally these guys look, when you're down on the floor, they look like small buildings and they're just like crashing into each other and flying. It literally, the game looks completely different when you're down on the floor. It looks like a mosh pit when you're down on the floor, but up high, it looks like a basketball game. So how those refs deviate, what's a foul and what's not a foul in a split second, it's kind of amazing to me. And they do a really good job for the most part.
Yeah, and I think they figure stuff out as guys, you know, are in the league longer and kind of figure out their tendencies. Just like KD's rip move, you know, that's not called every time anymore. And I think maybe they'll start to get some of these calls right with Blake over time. But
well, and that's why you see Steven Adams get zero calls because he's a rookie. They don't. Plus, now Adams kind of has a little reputation. His stone cold mantras kind of reverberated around the league.
Yeah, and he got called for that kind of a weak technical foul in Game 7 against the Grizzlies.
When he grazed a guy or like the guy ran into him or whatever.
Yeah, Gasol just ran right into him, and he just stood there and he got called for a tech. So, I mean, they're catching on some, but I still don't think they know how to officiate
I think that was the Grizzlies saying, look what this guy did to get Zach kicked out. You got to watch him. So the refs were ready to stop it before anything else started.
Yeah, I think you're right. What adjustments need to be made between Game 1 and Game 2 besides the obvious play defense stuff?
Oh, I mean, obviously they have to play better defense, that's for sure. I think to start the second quarter, I mean, granted, Brooks realized it wasn't working at all and immediately got Kevin Durant in, but I would love to see Brooks stagger Westbrook and Kevin's minutes more. I mean, you can't, there is no point in time in the playoffs you can have both Kevin and Russell off the floor. You just can't do it. It's not, you're going to give up a lead or you're going to, you know, your deficit's going to grow even further. You have to stagger those minutes. I thought Rick Carlisle is the best at that with Dirk. He staggers his minutes to where him and Monte, at least one of them's on the floor, so they have a guy. And I honestly think that would help Kevin and Russell offensively. If Russell doesn't have to worry, like if there's a period of time where it's just Russell and some backups where he can kind of do his own thing, you don't have to worry about getting Kevin involved, that could help his offense. So yes. I think that is a huge, huge thing that they need to consider is staggering their minutes more to where, say you're up or down to start the second quarter, I mean, that you have at least one of them out there still. That's an adjustment I would make. I would try to get Serge more involved. I mean, he's the best mid-range shooter they have. And in the playoffs, you know, everyone bemoans all the stat geeks say it's threes and layups. Well, and we're finding out in the playoffs that mid-range is wide open. That's why LaMarcus Aldridge was able to drop 40-something points two or three games in a row. And Serge last night, he's 6 of 9.
Yeah,
he needs more shots. It's that simple. But obviously, defense is the main thing. But I feel like I've been saying this since game one against the Grizzlies. Serge Ibaka needs more shots. It's that simple.
Yeah, and whenever they were on a roll at the beginning of the game, it was because Serge was involved. You know, with dunks and mid range jumpers, and I think you're right. It spreads the offense around. It gives the defense something else to look at. But they go away from it quickly, I feel like. And they go away from it as they go down the stretch of the game, too.
Well, and he was embarrassing Blake to start the game. Mm-hmm. He was pulling him out away from the rim and hitting open jumpers. And if you get Serge hitting those open jumpers, all that does is give Russell more space to drive and Kevin more space to drive. So for whatever reason, to start games, they're really good at getting Serge involved. And as the game progresses, they go away from him, especially – there were several games in the Grizzlies series in the fourth quarter where Ibaka didn't even take a shot in the fourth quarter or overtime, and that just can't happen. You have to keep him involved. He's your third best player, and he's deadly from mid range, and that's a lot of times in the playoffs, it's the only shot you're going to get.
Yeah. So I predicted Thunder in 7, and I'm going to stick to that. What was your prediction for the series?
I picked the Thunder in 7 too. That seems to be the common pick, just because everyone doesn't know who's going to win. But I mean, if you don't know who's, if you think you know who's going to win, you just pick them in 7. If you're not sure, so that's what I went. I'm not going to count them out. I mean, I counted them out in Game 6 against the Grizzlies, so yep. I learned my lesson there. So it's a long series. They're more than capable of winning LA. We've seen that before. But man, that was alarming watching Game 1. Watching them, they had no answers on defense whatsoever, and the Clippers aren't going to shoot that well, but they're going to shoot pretty well if you guard like that. So that's that's obviously what the Thunder need to be working on here in this day off.
Yeah. It's not Courtney Lee and Tayshaun Prince shooting threes anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No Beno Udra.
Oh, I'm Beno, so glad
Beno's
we don't have to
not
see
walking through that door.
Oh, I'm so glad we don't have to see that guy play basketball anymore. That was
I think the Thunder fans would like to see the Clippers trade for Tayshaun Prince.
Oh yeah.
Get him on the floor more.
Yeah, I think he had one really good game against the Thunder, but overall that guy is just got a shell of himself. He used to be an incredible basketball player. But.
Well, and I like Dave Yeager. I think he's a really good coach.
Yeah. But
his playing Prince over Allen so much was like Scott Brooks playing Perkins against the Heat. It was just like, what are you doing? Get him off the floor. He's killing you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Carson, thanks for coming back on the podcast. Let's hope for some better defense and some better shot selections and more Serge Ibaka in game two.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a more positive podcast next time.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Thanks, Carson.
All right, man. We'll see you.